I don't know about the rest of you, but I love this time of the day. I love how the cool, crisp night air kisses the ground, leaving behind a gentle layer of dew. I love looking up into the night sky and seeing the moon shining down upon us like an old, trusted friend. I look forward to spending our Thursday nights here together on Blog Talk Radio as we travel together on this journey into the night.
Deli Reads Radio, Journey into the Night. My name is Linda Barton, and I'm here with my co-host and partner in crime, Lisa Vandebeer. Hey, Lisa, what you doing tonight?
Just getting ready for this exciting show, and I'm excited about it. And the guest we're going to have, he's going to be interesting, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, I understand you're freezing your tuchus over there in your little part of the country.
Yes, it is cold. It is around the 40s. I haven't been outside since this morning, but this morning I got out, it was like between 30 and 46 or something like that. So I'm cold. It was cold.
That's cold for a southern girl, ain't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Well, we don't get any snow
with it. So if there was some snow with it, you know, it'd be fun to play in. But we just get the cold, no snow.
Just the cold.
Yeah.
Well, it was storming crazy this earlier today and everything, but it's calmed down a little bit now. So I guess we're going to weather it another day here in Southeast Texas.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, well, I tell you, this weather this winter has just been crazy. It gets cold, and then, I mean, they're talking we could see 80 degrees again later on in the week. So I just don't know.
Oh, my goodness. Crazy. That's crazy. Yeah.
That's why everybody's sick, I think.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, well, tonight we have a very interesting guest coming on. Thorn is going to be joining us. Now, just to let everybody know, this is a pre-recorded show, so you won't be able to call in and speak to Stephen, but you will get to enjoy listening to him as we have him on tonight as our guest. Stephen Thorn is an author of horror who was inspired by such greats as Stephen King, Richard Matheson, Robert W. Service, and Harold, I'm going to kill this one, I know, Schweitzer? Schwitcher, S-C-H-E-C-H-E-R, sorry about that, just to name a few. Stephen writes other genres as well, but horror is his passion. He says that he enjoys writing scary stories because of the strength of feeling, the depth of raw emotion it fires within us. It allows him to manipulate his readers on a physical level. Now, this sounds like a perfect way to think as a horror author. So, why don't we bring Stephen on and pick his brain and give him a warm, deadly read. Welcome. Hey, Stephen, how's it going?
Hi, Steve.
Hello. Thank you very much. It's going very well.
I didn't mean to slaughter that author's name, but I'm the world's worst name killer, so I'm notorious for that one.
That's Harold Schechter.
Schechter. Okay. I'm sorry,
yeah.
Mr. Schechter. But if there's
yeah,
an unusual name, I slaughter.
He writes a lot of true crime stories, or books, I should say. You probably are familiar with some of the historical horror stories, like the case that inspired, here you go, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which actually fellow by the name of Edward Gein in Plainfield, Wisconsin. And Gein was definitely off his cookie. He was a grave robber and a cannibal and a murderer, just really not the kind of guy you'd want to live next door to. But Schechter wrote a book about the case, explaining what happened and going through it step by step. But I just happened to pick that up off the shelf one day. I was in a store and saw it, and I loved his style. It was so engaging, and it took this case that by this time was more than 60 years old and made it seem to be happening just today. So I really like Schechter's work. He's done the cases of Albert Fish, who was probably the most depraved man in American history. And a number of other historical horrors that, I could go on. But, yeah, Schechter's really terrific.
Okay, yeah, my husband, he's a real history buff, and he loves doing research. I say, honey, you're sick and twisted. But he gives me a lot of my good ideas for books, so I guess that's good. But he likes to get on there and study about really, the older, serial killers and all that you just don't hear about, because they're from a long time ago. And there were some really twisted people, really bad. So, we think Jeffrey Dahmer and all that, but there were some really bad ones that did a lot more a long time ago. So it's amazing. So it's pretty interesting stuff. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So
if you look up Harold Schechter in Amazon as an author, you'll find he has some really good books. And I recommend him if you're into serial killers or true crime stories. He's terrific.
Okay.
Cool. Okay, I have to check that out.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, you were born and live in Pennsylvania, correct?
No, Harrisburg.
Okay. So now, can you tell us what it was like growing up there in Harrisburg or Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I don't think it's too much different from most places, really. Now, I was lucky because I was born and raised on a farm until I was 7 years old. And we were living in this great big three-story house with an attic and a root cellar. The root cellar was really not much more than a hole in the ground. And with a coal bin and shelves on the walls for the canned vegetables and so on. Lots of spiders and very dark. And the attic was the length of the whole house, very gloomy and dusty. Two really great places to inspire scary thoughts,
Oh, yeah.
And according to my grandfather, the house during the Civil War had been owned by Quakers. And he said that it had been part of the Underground Railroad. Assuming that to be the case, he explained, sometimes, by the time a slave got as far north as Pennsylvania, they weren't in very good shape anymore. The trip was hard on them, and they hadn't been taken that good care of anyway. So some of them, while they were hiding there in the root cellar, died. And, of course, you couldn't just go into town and tell the sheriff, hey, we got a dead escaped slave out here. So it had to be covered over. And the slave would be taken out into the woods under cover of darkness and buried out in the woods. And, they give him a Christian service and all that, but they were still out there. And grandfather to tell us about the ghosts that still walk through the woods. And, supposedly on certain nights you would hear the sound of men doing a holler, which is a kind of work song to help stave off insanity and keep the rhythm of what you're doing. And then suddenly you'd hear a sound, bang, bang, bang. Could be gunshots or the crack of a whip, and everything would go quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I never heard it myself, but that was the story. And again, this is all part of what went into my head. So, yeah, it was
seed.
An awesome place to grow up.
The seed. Well, there's a lot of areas that, you know, were, you know, Civil War, that there's so many stories like that, you know, because of the mass amount of death, you know.
And of course, we're just a short trip from Gettysburg. You know, which was the bloodiest conflict of the war.
I've talked to many people over the years that say that if they say that they're, you know, sensitive to the afterlife, those in the afterlife who say that you go to Gettysburg, and I guess they just sent, you know, spirits all over the place, you know, so it makes sense.
Yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised. I've driven through Gettysburg, and I've taken tours through there and so forth. There's been a couple of times that I can't say I saw something supernatural, but it would have been very easy to believe that I did because of fog and so forth. Oh, yeah.
I think you have to be sensitive to that stuff, too, as well. I mean, you might see something and not even realize that it is a ghost. I mean, I personally believe in ghosts and things of that nature, so... but if you're not sensitive to that, then you might see one and not realize you're seeing one, I think.
That's true.
So.
That's true.
It's very well be. Yeah. From things I've read, quite often, you know, ghosts don't look like somebody under a sheet. They look like a person in a costume. So it's entirely possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Sometimes you think, oh, you rub your eyes, you think you're tired, or your mind's playing tricks on you or something. That's not always the case, I think. I think you're actually seeing something.
But you know what? That planted the perfect seeds for you to write your book.
Oh,
yeah.
You
know,
absolutely.
You know.
Well, as I often say, you know, writing is sort of like getting a hand of cards. Because every day you go out in the world and you're given the hand of cards that we all are dealt. And it sort of depends on how you play them, what you get out of your day. And you and I watch the same news report, you know, about, somebody winning the lottery. And you have your thoughts on it and your take on it. I come up with something totally different. And maybe from yours, you come up with a funny joke to tell at work. I come up with a scary story.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's all grist, really.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Well, that's like even just our books. You know, I don't know if you've had this happen to you, but, you know, I know I have, you know, a certain book I've written, and somebody will read it, and then somebody else will read it. And when they talk about it, it's almost like, I mean, they have the general plot the same, but they've gotten totally different things out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And you just kind of sit back and smile and say, okay, wow, they got more out of it than even I did when I was writing it. Wow, they're a deeper thinker than I, you know? But, I mean, it's just like you said, you know, it's totally different how what people perceive.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's true, you know, and it's so true in our books. You know, I'm sure if I was to read a scary story and you were to read a scary story, we would get two totally different things out of it, because it's how it affects us on that level you talk about, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. It's all perspective. It really is. We are all the sum of our past. And the way that I was formed in the things that I've been through in my life are totally different from yours, and totally different from yours, and totally different. And it all changes and forms what we see and experience. It filters it, so to speak. changes it subtly through our perspective. And, oh, yeah, the same thing can be a million things to half a million people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Now, can you tell us some about your stories you've written, your short ones, The Unwelcome Kind of Tenant, A Short Conversation? Yeah, tell us a bit about those, please.
Okay. Well, Unwelcome Kind of Tenants, that actually started from an event. Some friends of mine back in 1980 were just newlyweds, and they were looking to buy a house. And they were going to take a walkthrough of this house they were thinking of buying. They asked me to go along with them. Well, the house that we went through had been built by a bootlegger during Prohibition. And the house just impressed the heck out of me because at the time he built it, it was a mansion. Well, some of the things that I saw there just really stuck in my head. And I really thought, oh, that's beautiful, and oh, isn't that cool, and oh, look at that. Well, that combined with an offhand comment one of my college professors had made, those two things came together and created the house and the main character for Unwelcome Kind of Tenants. So if you read the story, that house that I'm describing, that really is the bootlegger's mansion that I called Shining Moon Way.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
So it's,
oh, interesting.
It's not precise, but it's a very, very good replica, you could say. And as far as short conversation, well, I say with a little bit of pride, I think that's the only story I ever wrote that my stepfather liked. He wasn't big on fiction, but he did like that. He showed that off to a few people, so I think I must have done pretty good on that one. And Spirit Elk was actually a prequel to A Short Conversation, but it was written afterwards. In A Short Conversation, in A Short Conversation, I mention an Indian legend about a ghostly or spirit elk that men will follow through the woods to their destruction. And I tossed it off in the story and just went with that. But it stuck in my head, and I thought to myself later on, you know, I really ought to write that too. And so I did. And Case 24174K, or to make it simpler on all of us rather than remember that weird title, I just call it the Ken Rosewood story. That was actually my first attempt at writing humor. I wanted to write a comedy horror story. So that came about from the same house where The Unwelcome Kind of Tenants sprang from. In that house was built on this big piece of land, and over in one corner of that piece of land was another house that we toured. This was much smaller and much older. It was built during the colonial period in America, and it was an old enough house that it still had little holes through the wall on the main floor, because it was a two-story building, under the windows, a hole, oh, just smaller than you could put your fist through. They were gun ports.
Huh.
So if your house is besieged by renegade Indians or raiders, you can poke your gun out through that little hole and shoot. Anyway, in the one wall of this place, there was a stone set in the wall up at the apex of the roof that was carved with the name and information of the man who built the house. And so that house developed into the house that Heinrich, the ghost from the Ken Rosewood story, built. Yeah, they're pat myself on the back a little bit here. They're pretty good stories.
Well, people have to check them out. I've never tried writing comedy before, so I understand that's harder to write than your other fiction, than your other genres.
It is for me.
Well, I mean, I couldn't imagine even attempting it. So, I mean, I have a little bit of humor in some of my stories, but to write one full of it, no, there's no way. There's no way.
Well, humor is the most subjective emotion, okay? Mm-hmm. We all get scared by some of the same things. We have some differences. But I promise you, if there is a great big dog snarling and snapping and drooling and it's chasing you, you're going to be scared.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? That just but the same thing that makes me laugh and bust a gut isn't going to affect you, and someone else might just chuckle at it. It's so changeable. And that makes it really tough to write.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. And it has
now,
a
I try it occasionally.
Audience. Huh?
I try it occasionally.
Okay.
You know, as a matter of fact, the story that I'm working on right now is a comedy story.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's something I dip my toes in here and there.
Well, I've tried, like Lisa said, I'll have little, you know, segments of something humorous happening with a character in one of my stories, but I've never written what I would consider a comedy, so... My hat's off to you. That's a brave thing to do.
Right.
Well, I was going to say, you might want to try it. And the reason I say that, the experts will tell you to stretch your muscles. Don't just stick in one thing. Just like, you know, they say that to be a writer, you have to be a reader. And they recommend that you read voraciously in any genre at all. Don't just stick with the genre that you write in, because you're only getting a certain amount of perspective that way. But
I have stretched out. I write in several different genres. It's just comedy is one I haven't tried yet. So.
Give it a try. Give it a try. What's the worst that can happen? You come up with something and you say, ah, this isn't so good, and you put it in a drawer, and someday when you're dead, your grandkids will find it and say, hey, look at this, and they'll get money for it.
Well, yeah, as being an indie author, and as being an indie author, you write it, you get it nice and clean, you do your best, you put it up and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What can happen,
I mean, I have actually come up with an idea for a humorous story, but as far as I got was the idea. You know, I haven't actually sat down and tried to write it, though.
Well, now's there's your impetus to give it a try.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
The challenge is out, Lisa. The challenge is out.
Yep.
I have confidence in you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Well, Lisa writes multi-genre, too. She writes romantic suspense. She writes fantasy. She writes dark fantasy, so she's on there herself. So.
Terrific.
Yeah, I've got my toes in just about everything.
The only thing I haven't done yet,
I haven't done romance. I haven't done romance yet.
You have to do that.
I've got one, telling her she's got to try romance. She'd be good at
it. I've done thrillers, dark thrillers, horror. I'm working on a kind of a paranormal horror thriller thing that I've been working on for quite a while. I've done women's contemporary. I've done fantasy. I've even done two children's books.
Really?
And then that's... under another name, I do a little more naughty stuff. So.
I wanted to try writing a children's book. It's something that it's been recommended to me that I do. And I think that, I'd like to try that. I just cannot seem to put my mind in the right direction for it. You know, my mind does not go that way. Now, sure, if it's a kid's book about, say, a playground slide that comes to life and starts mashing children into the ground,
that might be a good book. Because to me, it's the same thing as comedy, as writing comedy. That is just, I can't get my mind focused on comedy or children, because I'm like you. I like the vampires and the, you know, violence.
Well,
I just thought of a great comedy book for you. You could write. when you was talking about the playground stuff coming alive and smashing the children. You could write it about a distressed mother who, you know, she's going crazy, her kids are making her nuts, and she visualizes this stuff. You know, she takes the kids to the playground, and the kids have been making her crazy, and she's watching them all of a sudden. She has visions of this happening. You could do all sorts of twisted stuff that this mother is imagining.
You know what would probably work better for that rather than writing it? Illustrating it. And I'll tell you why. Are you familiar with the artwork of a fellow by the name of Edward Gorey?
No, I've never seen it.
Edward Gorey used to do rather simple black and white cartoons. Terribly macabre things. And they really caused quite a sensation. They're still popular today. If you ever watched the old Masterpiece Theater on PBS, it would start off with some of his cartoons. Anyway, to make it short, I could see something like that being illustrated in his style. But to give you an idea, you know, I said about the playground equipment coming to life. One of the novelettes that I started and has sort of bogged down right now, I haven't worked on it in a while, concerned the main protagonist was a writer himself. And in the story, he's writing about a sort of a slacker kind of character who accidentally is infused with dinosaur DNA. And he transforms into a 7-foot-tall purple T-Rex. No names here.
Sounds like Bonnie to me.
Well, I didn't want to say that. Starts to sing and dance and gets his own TV show. However, one fine day, while he's singing and dancing and surrounded by children in the studio, the predator instinct in his DNA wakes up, and he realizes that he's surrounded by little hors d'oeuvres. And at the point that the writing is taking place, he's dragging one of the little Muppets around by his ankle, looking for a suitably large taco shell.
Well, you may need to change his color because you could get in trouble over it being purple.
Well, yeah, probably. Maybe just a little
change
bit.
Change the color.
Just
make them a different color. Then they can't come after you, but that's too funny. In all honesty, I thought that was one of the most obnoxious shows. I was so thankful my children didn't want to watch it. My grandchildren never wanted to watch it. I was like, oh, thank goodness.
My kid liked it, so.
You poor thing. That was definitely one of those eye roll shows.
Thank heavens I managed to escape and not have that problem.
Well, you know, he was talking about that thing about the mother in the playground and stuff. Another thing popped in my mind when he was talking about that artist. You know, that might make a really good... You know how coloring books are very popular right now with adults?
Yes. Yes.
I could see an adult coloring book telling a story of a mother that's crazy and all these visions that she sees of stuff happening to her kids. You can't tell me a woman wouldn't buy that on a day when kids are driving crazy and want to color in something, ripping them kids up. You know, you can't do it yourself, but...
Let's take the children to the zoo today.
I hope the police don't come after us. This is fiction we're talking about. Just fiction.
Lisa, they haven't beat down my door yet because of my searching on my computer. So my browsing history. Now, I've been asked you, Stephen, do you have strange browsing history when you're doing research for your book?
Well, define the word strange.
Well, I found out just because you look up how how to build a bomb. They don't beat down your door with a machine gun, so I'm in good shape so far.
Oh, my gosh.
Let me put it to you this way. I've done some research on, for instance, medieval torture devices.
Oh, there you go.
Would probably turn some people tear white.
I really
don't think I have to worry too much about Homeland Security come knocking on my door because I'm looking up hanging cages and gibbets. You know, they're not exactly weapons of mass destruction.
There you go.
Yeah. Just the people that they're torturing.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's only one. That's acceptable nowadays.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, hearing how you talk, so these authors that inspired you, who is the one that you think gives you the most inspiration to write your twisted stuff? Because it sounds like you're a little twisted guy.
Who, me?
He's my kind of guy. He's my kind of author. I'm going to have to check his stuff out.
Well, it's kind of a tie, actually. And I say that because I love Stephen King's style. I think he's an exceptionally good writer.
Mm-hmm.
But where he falls apart for me is a few million books ago, he started to believe his own hype and thinks that he should get paid by the letter, and consequently he throws as many words into his books as he can fit in. And he's about, you know, 50 yards past loquacious. Well, because he goes on and on and on and on, it falls apart for me. On the other hand, Richard Matheson, who inspired Stephen King, I should mention, Richard Matheson is a master of brevity. The man can tell a better story in 2,000 words than a lot of authors can tell in 20,000.
Wow.
And his work is very, very tight. Beautiful short stories. Really good stuff. But it's tight. There is not an extra word in the whole thing. So... I learned style from King, and I learned how to make the words count better from Matheson.
Maybe I need to buy some of Matheson's work and do some studying, because we all have that problem. You know, we try to get our writing as tight as possible, but a lot of times as authors, and I know we all do it from time to time, we fall in love with our words, you know, and then you send it to the editor, and they're like, I mean, let's start cutting, you know?
Right.
Well, as a matter of fact, you're probably more familiar with Matheson's work than you think, because he was a phenomenally successful writer. He did screenplays and radio plays and books, and just if you've watched TV any length of time, especially from the 60s and 70s, you've seen his work. He did scripts for Star Trek and Twilight Zone, and I think he had one in Night Gallery, and just no matter where you go, it's not hard to bump into him.
Oh, okay.
So, as a matter of fact, I just read, he wrote one Western novel that I just read earlier this year. It's called The Gunfight, and I didn't know what to expect, but Westerns aren't really my thing, but it was a good story because it dealt so much with the human element and the feeling in the story that the juggernaut has started to roll and everybody is caught up in it, including you. You're caught up in the story, and it's this inevitable finality coming up. And you don't know for sure what it's going to look like, but you know something big's going to happen. You have your own hope of what it will be, but you don't know, of course. And once it's got its hooks into you, it just drags you right along. So, yeah, look him up. Matheson is good.
Okay, I will, because you know, we're always learning to learn. I'm always looking to learn
right.
new things and how to improve our writing. And, you know, you go back and you read your first stuff and you read the stuff you're doing now and you're like, whoa, big change, you know, because you progress
mm-hmm.
as you go along,
yeah.
you know. And,
you know, and I believe, you know, that if you get to the point where you think that you can't grow anymore, then you don't need to be in this business, you know. Because I feel like I probably will never get where I want to be, but it gives me a place to strive for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
yes,
yeah.
And it's, you know, and like, you know, Lisa and I laugh all the time. You know, we may not be famous authors. You know, we may not be making millions, and you know, but that's okay. We're having fun with what we're doing, and it's fulfilling us.
Yeah.
And if it touches other people, that's good too. You know.
Yeah.
We always joke
yeah.
and say, yeah, once we're dead, we'll be famous. Because isn't that all the
yeah.
You're not really truly famous until you're dead. So.
That's true.
Well, I think I love writing so much that even if I knew I would never sell another page of
mm-hmm.
my work, I'd still keep
mm-hmm.
writing. Because
yeah,
I just
yeah.
enjoy it. And like
uh-huh.
you
yeah.
said, if I can touch another person with it, then that makes it worthwhile.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've done something that I'll probably get beat up for saying this, but, you know, I've started making certain of my older books available for free.
Mm-hmm.
And I figure, you know, I've made money on them. They paid me back for any money I put out. I'm not doing all of them. I'm just doing, you know, one at a time every now and then. Because I thought, you know, a lot of people... they just want the free ones. I understand it. But a lot of people, they want to read, but it gets expensive over time. You know, especially
yeah.
if you're a person that reads a lot. You know, you get a person that reads 2 or 3 books a week, that can add up, you know, and on the average budget, a lot of people can't afford that. So, you know, I probably have authors want to rip my head off for saying this, but, you know, I'm starting to make some of mine free. And, you know, so it's really... it's kind of disheartening when you see the free ones go like crazy and the ones for sale don't move as quickly. But I
right.
look at it this way, too. At least I'm being read. And hopefully they're enjoying the book as much as I enjoyed writing it,
mm.
you know. And to me, that's just as fulfilling, you know. When I have somebody to get a hold of me who got one of my free ones, you know, and say, I really, really liked your book, you know.
I think also you have to look at it this way. like you said, you're getting read. You know, I've had a couple of my friends sort of look down their nose at me a little bit because I've had some things published that I didn't get paid for. You know,
mm-hmm.
you get paid in copies or what have you, and they sort of like,
yeah.
oh, well, you're doing that free thing.
Right.
But... to me, hey, it's publicity. Somebody's
mm-hmm.
going to read that who ordinarily might not have seen my work.
Exactly.
And that's an investment.
Correct.
That gets them to maybe notice me and say, hey, this dude, he knows his stuff. This Thorn guy,
mm-hmm.
where can
right.
I see more of him?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah,
know,
I mean,
that's a good point.
Well,
yeah,
I,
and that's the way I look at it, because I've had people do that, you know, because then always whenever I do my e-book, at the end, I always, you know, have a link back to my page, you know, on Amazon. Please take a moment to leave a review. I always do that. Of course, that's like trying to get people, that's like pulling teeth to get a review. But then I also put the link in there for my other book. And that way, like you said, it's a little advertising. They read that one. If they like it, they may want to check out something else.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
You know.
And every... well, I can't say every, but I've heard of a lot of extremely famous authors, names that you could find on any bookshelf in this country, that
mm-hmm.
have had their times being published for free.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
right.
when they're starting out, but it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing
yeah.
wrong with putting things out there for free. I do that. If
right.
I have a story... that I sold it a couple of years ago, and I'm not planning on, you know, taking it back and re-editing and changing anything in it and doing a director's cut, so to speak. I don't have a problem with putting it out for free. There's enough copies of it floating around out there anyway. If somebody wanted
right.
it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what's nice nowadays is with being able to self-publish. You just put it up. It doesn't cost you anything to publish it. You know, so it's not like you're out mm-hmm. any money. It doesn't cost anything for the people to get copies because it's all done, you know, digitally. So you're not out anything, you know. Like I said, if you've mm-hmm. had one that's been out there and you get, you know, it's made its money back, or you've written a short one and you decide, well, I'm just going to make this a freebie, like you said, for advertising purposes and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, that's the point that I'm at right now. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. Not all my books are free, no, so don't think that, folks. But I'm putting a few mm-hmm. of them more out there that are free, and maybe, like you said, people get a taste of my work, and like they get a taste of yours and other people's, and they say, oh, you know,
well,
I like how that's right.
Think about it. You go
yeah.
to the deli, you go to the grocery store, and there's something in the deli that looks good, but you never tried it before. You ask them, they give you a spoon with a little bit on there to taste it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's true.
And maybe you say, ooh, hey, give me some of that. maybe you don't like it. But this gives you
right.
a chance.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, what I'm planning to do is with mine, because I've got some series out there, is maybe, you know, give the first book free. Or, and I might break it up and get like give the, you know, first two books free, something like that in a series.
Yeah, first one's
on my
website. With the trilogy. Yeah.
What I do on my website, yeah. if I have a story that is currently being optioned to print or mm-hmm. is in print for sale, I'll post a couple mm-hmm. of pages of it at the beginning
mm-hmm.
on my website.
Mm-hmm.
And then people
mm-hmm.
can read that and they say, hey, maybe they want to buy it. Maybe they don't. But this gives them
mm-hmm.
a chance to find out a bit more, again, what I'm doing and what's out there. I figure that's
right.
not hurting anybody.
No, it's not.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah, because we do the same thing on our website with our books. We have, you know,
right.
we have part of it there. So, yeah. Yeah, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Well, it sounds like we're kind of all on the same page then. Huh?
That's
mm-hmm.
right. We're doing
so now,
pretty
do
good,
have,
hey?
Yeah.
So now, do you have any favorite mm-hmm. hobbies or anything that influence your writing? Other than, please don't tell me you go around chopping people up or anything. I just don't want to know that one, okay?
Yeah.
If I did, I wouldn't tell you now, would I?
Well, there you go. I'm just
no.
Don't share that one with us.
Yeah, don't share that with us.
not influence it so much as helps it along, okay?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, for instance, one of my hobbies, I call it grave snapping, which sounds weirder than it really is. I'll walk around in cemeteries, and I take pictures of statuary or carvings or epitaphs or unusual tombstones, things like that.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
Some of them are actually very beautiful and even poetic, and some of them are very poignant. For instance, right here in my town, there's a tombstone. It's quite old. It's from the late 1700s. And on top of it, they have constructed what is essentially a cave,
mm-hmm.
roughly the size of, a fair size, or a microwave oven, about that
mm-hmm.
big. And inside it are huddled two children, a little boy and a girl. And
mm-hmm.
they're holding on to each other like for warmth. Now, if you read the information on the stone, this was a brother and sister who died within 6 months of each other, both of them preschoolers. So
yeah.
I don't know if, you know, they had like scarlet fever or something like that, but the epitaph is, God needed more jewels for his crown. He took all that
Aww.
He had.
Mm-hmm.
And so things like that, they cause thoughts in that direction. You think about, well, what were these kids like? What did their parents think? What did they feel? What, you know, what were their lives like before that? And how did their parents go on from that point? And all these questions.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
again, it's grist for the mill. It gives you something else to think about. And
mm-hmm.
I'm of the opinion if you spend enough time in enough cemeteries on quiet days, you will have some kind of gloomy or morbid or eerie thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
It's that environment. So,
yeah,
that hobby has given me some ideas for stories and the right mindset. And sometimes it's just a matter of it's so quiet. You can actually hear yourself think there. You turn off the cell phone. You don't have the TV on. And it's peaceful.
Right. My husband has always thought it would be fun to start a Facebook group with where people could join and share pictures of cemeteries.
There are cemeteries.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're already
there.
Tell him he'll have to join it because he's always been fascinated. He's always thought it'd be neat to go around and just take pictures of the old ones, you know.
I do too. I enjoy doing that too. I know it's, like you said, somebody else might think it's strange, but it's really not. It's peaceful. A lot of it started when I was, gathering pictures, say, for book covers or YouTube videos and things like that for my, but then once I started doing it, it's really peaceful. And, I enjoy doing that too. So,
we're trying to get it. We got 12 minutes left of the show, so we better start wrapping this stuff up. Are you working on anything right now, or do you have a future work in progress, or what's happening with your writing right now?
Well, right now, like I said, I'm working on a humor story. I have a couple of fictional characters, my Aunt Iola and her best friend Brenda, who I've written two stories with them already, and this is the third. That the two of them, you could say, aren't exactly the sharpest knives in the drawer. And they run into some trouble with the things that they do in the little bitty town of Ishpeming, Michigan.
Oh, that's a good name.
I love the name. It's lyrical. But, yeah, that's where they live, and they're running into some more trouble. So that's what I'm working on right now.
Sounds like fun. Do you have any future ideas swarming around in your head yet?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. Recently, an idea popped up that I don't quite know how I'm going to turn it into something yet, but I bought a piece of jewelry, and the jewelry gave me an idea to hook up with something I had started writing years before. The years before part had to do with a man looking to purchase a specific rare object, but I couldn't figure out exactly what it was. Well, now I found this piece of jewelry. That's it. That's what he was looking for. I got it now. And I don't want to give away too much, but the jewelry in question has very powerful supernatural powers on the, we could say, the heavenly side of the spectrum. And now that he has acquired this, I'm trying to decide what I want to do with him and with this object. So that's on the back burner, you might say.
Well, I'm sure the voices in your head, the ones in the back burner, are working on it right now. And all of a sudden, they'll go, boop, there it is.
The voice is in my head.
Yeah, you'll be sound asleep one night in that perfect position where you're just utterly floating and content, and they'll go, hey, wake up, we got to talk.
Oh, don't wish that on me, please. I couldn't get to sleep this morning.
Oh, it happens to me all the time.
I couldn't get to sleep this morning because an idea came into my head of a spaceship, and I want to draw this spaceship because of how, anyway, I digress, but then I couldn't get to sleep because my mind is playing with this dumb spaceship.
Well, I was in bed really comfortable the other night. I finally convinced myself to go to bed at like 3:30 in the morning because I've been up working, and I'm laying down in bed, and I'm really starting to float really good, and it was awesome. Thump, thump, thump. Hey, hey, you need to do this. You need to do it now, because if you don't do it now, you'll forget to not do it tomorrow. So
yeah.
I got out of bed, walked over to the computer, did that thing that I was supposed to do. And, okay, you guys done? You got to let me go to sleep now. You know, because I talk about my voices all the time. I'm, you know, I hear voices. I guess I'm schizophrenic, you know. Well, because they rule my life, the same thing. You know, they win the arguments. You know, they
Yeah, I think we've all gone down that road a time or two. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So do you have anything else you'd like to share with us before Blog Talk turns us off?
Well, certainly I wanted to, if you don't mind, give the URLs to my websites.
I will have all that up for you on the show link. I will also put them on the YouTube video when I put that up on our YouTube channel. So they will have all those links. People will have
okay.
them.
I also wanted to thank my readers, the people who keep consuming the crazy ink that I throw around, because I really do appreciate them, and it means a lot to me that I can take them on these trips, that I can be their tour guide, if you will, and take them to the scary places and the amazing places and the funny places. So, yeah, ladies and gentlemen out there, please, if you have started reading my stuff, keep it up. If you haven't yet, what's wrong with you?
That's what we all want to say. What's wrong with you?
Flap, flap, flap. What's wrong with you? Read this stupid stuff.
Right.
Don't make me write a book about you.
Yeah, I'll kill you in it.
Oh, my gosh. I think we've all done that. Now, tell me, Stephen, have you also killed somebody that really kicked you off in one of your books?
No, I did not kill somebody, but I did something a little bit similar. I should mention, I have a physical handicap, okay? And it just tears me up when perfectly healthy people use the facilities that people with handicaps need. And one time back when I was working in an office near here, I really had to pee. and I went in the men's room, and the handicap stall that I needed to use had somebody in it. And when he came out, unless he had a handicap that you couldn't see, this 30-something guy, you know, he had no reason to be in there. And I just about went on the floor waiting for him. So I started a story wherein the person who's waiting outside the stall door is actually a hitman. And he's there to kill the president of the company. But he has to stop to go first. And he's in the bathroom and, you know, the stall that he needs because his costume, he's wearing a leg cast. And on crutches. He has to go in there. And there's somebody in there. And he says, you know, hey, can I use it? And the guy says, piss off. You know, go take a flying leap. Look, man, I need to use it. You know, get out of here. Leave me alone. So he waits. And in his fake cast, he has a knife made from a hacksaw blade.
Ooh.
And when the guy comes out, the first thing he does is whip this blade across the back of the man's knee and disable him, put him on the floor, and then he basically beats the hell out of him and, you know, kicks him in the side a few times and kicks his teeth in and then pisses all over the guy before he leaves to make things even. And then he has messed up his opportunity because this is going to make trouble. And he has to quick go down to the freight elevator and get rid of his costume and everything so he can walk out the door while the police are there investigating
the
assault.
Right.
Yeah, because they're looking for some guy in a cast, huh?
Yeah, a cast, a beard, a yellow rain slicker. You know, I mean, he looks like he just came in off a fishing boat. and the man walking out the door is clean shaven. He's in a gray business suit. And he's
no cast.
Yeah.
How funny. Well, I tell you what, it's very cathartic. It's very cathartic to do horrible, twisted, nasty, mean things to somebody that's really angered you. I have done it before. I wrote one book in particular where I killed several people in the book, but it was all of it was aimed at one particular person. And Lisa knows how bad it was.
Yeah.
I was really upset with that person. We're talking
about something really inventive and painful.
Well, yeah, skinning and skinning people, and yeah, it was really gross. Yeah, it was pretty bad. I felt so much better. It was like, phew, I still hate this person, but I really don't want to do all this stuff to him now because I just did.
Yeah, that's right.
And I don't have to worry about going to jail.
That's right.
Right.
Yep. I remember I had a lady ask me one time what I do for a living. I says, I get paid to kill people. And she looked at me. I said, I'm an author. She goes, oh, okay.
Don't feel bad. There's a gag that I use. I tell people sometimes, you know, they want to know about my past. And for a while, I was a professional boxer, which means that I worked in a warehouse, and they brought me orders, and I put them in a box, and I sealed it to mail it.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
That's a good one. Slight play on words. No big deal.
Yeah.
Well, Stephen, we need to wrap this up because Blog Talk's going to shut us off here in a minute or so. So it was a complete joy to have you join us.
Oh,
we enjoyed talking to you. Wish you much success, everybody. The links are right here on. You'll be able to find them here on Blog Talk, and then also too. Go to the Desi Reed YouTube channel, and we will have his show up there so you can listen again and get his links and share it with your friends and go buy his books and check him out on social media. So, Stephen?
Well, I certainly appreciate you having me on the show, and I wanted to wish both ladies a happy Valentine's Day.
Well, thank you. Happy Valentine's Day to you, too. You know what my Valentine was? My husband took me out to Mexican food last night. Wasn't that nice?
Yes, it
awesome.
Was.
Yeah.
Assuming, of course, that you like Mexican food.
Oh, I love it. I love it. He goes, I'm taking you out. Where do you want to go? I just gave him the look. He goes, okay, we're going. Come on, load it up. Okay, well, Stephen, we'll talk to you some other time. We'll have to have you back with us.
That would be very nice. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Well, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
Okay.
So,
well, folks, this is our last show on Blog Talk Radio. We're now going to be doing podcasts. You'll be able to listen to us on our YouTube channel, our Desi Reed YouTube channel. So keep in touch and listen to us there.
Yeah, nothing's changing. Just we'll be doing the same old stuff.
Different venue. Yep.
Yeah.
Same silly stuff, just different venue, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to call it a night because Blog Talk's about ready to shut us off. You guys have a good time, and we'll see you on YouTube.